Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing for Manessas. We're here today and during this month to talk about initiations, how they affect people, our theories about what we're actually doing, our idea about what the results are, and so on. And I'm sure that we all have our individual experiences of initiation, and the way that we put them into our own matrix of experiences or perhaps even interests. So as you know, some of the other interviewees that I've done have talked about ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, the Catholic Church, their experiences of initiation in other ways. And today I have with me Alima Fontaine. She's from Mexico, but her parents are French, so she has a very interesting kind of dual culture that I was very interested in accessing, and we'll see if that has any bearing on her theories and experiences, or whether that was just my pipe dream. So we'll see. So welcome, Alima, to the show. Yeah, it's wonderful to have you.
I'm so glad to be here.
Great. Well, as you know, I really love starting with Reiki stories because I find that they're all individual and yet they have some really wonderful similarities. So tell us, how did you get into Reiki? How did you hear about it?
Well, I heard about it from a friend who referred to me a doctor that did some charismatic healing. And he had just come from his own Reiki class about a month previously. He had taken a class, and he really wanted to experience and experiment with Reiki. So he gave me my first Reiki treatment, and that really, it was this very simple experience, but when the treatment ended, I realized that something had happened to me, and I really didn't know what. So I asked him when his teacher was coming back because I wanted to.
So you were intrigued by the mystery of it, perhaps?
Yes. And it was, I had a different association with mystery. Perhaps I thought it would be something complicated, and it turned out to be something that I could not put words to, but that felt really simple.
Well, maybe we should back up a little bit because I've introduced you as living in Mexico, but at that time, were you living, you weren't living where you are now?
No.
You were close to Mexico City, but?
Yes, I was close to Mexico City. I was in a small town called Valle de Bravo, and I had been searching very intensely for a couple of years. I had been knocking on many doors, and I was in the middle of nowhere in Mexico, really.
I see. So Reiki That's came to you in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. Reiki found me, actually, in the middle of nowhere.
And what were you searching for?
Well, I was raised, as you said, by French parents in a very French atmosphere in Mexico. And in a very Catholic country where, prayer and initiations and are very much part of the culture, and by parents who never spoke of anything that had to do with any religious belief.
And really?
It really was a contrast, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, my parents were both very, very agnostic, so they did not ever mention anything that had to do with mystery.
Hmm.
So when my brother had drowned and died very suddenly, and I found myself at loss, really searching very intensely for answers to my questions.
Did you have experiences after your brother died of him?
Yes, I did. I did, and I couldn't put words to it.
Uh-huh.
I really felt that I needed to give some sense to life and death. I felt it's the first time I really experienced a person close to me dying.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And as I said, you know, the only experience that made difference was that Reiki treatment.
Uh-huh. So somehow they were connected.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. And I was thinking about this theme of initiation and realized how significant the initiation of first degrees were for me. They were, it felt, I didn't know what to expect because I had all sorts of mixed messages coming from my country and my parents. They were conflictive. And as I sat during the initiation, I had this extraordinary experience. It felt like I was dissolving into something much greater than I was, and I was touched. I felt that was the way I needed to explore it, to know more about life and death.
Fascinating. And did you feel like you had this quite common experience, it seems, of coming home?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and would that be this feeling of dissolving into oneness?
Exactly. I remember the words were, I don't need to look for anything else anymore.
Uh-huh.
I'm home.
Beautiful.
Yes. I remember it and it still touches me. I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. So then you went on with your studentship?
Then I went on. I realized that as I sat in my first session during this first degree, and I said, well, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life, so how do I go about it? I loved everything about it. I remember looking at my master's hands and seeing them move, and I realized there was something about her hands that really took me. I mean, that it really, that was something that I wanted my hands to, I would use shine like hers.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, I did my second degree. Perhaps now that I see it with a little bit of retrospective, I perhaps wasn't really ready for it. So it took me some time to understand the energy of my hands without a body underneath it. And many years later, was initiated as a master.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years later. And then it was about me initiating other people, which became something completely different.
Mm-hmm. So, what was it? Do you remember what it was like to do your first class?
Yes, I do. I do. It was feeling an incredible sense of responsibility. And at the same time, feeling an openness and willingness in the people that took the first class. It was so beautiful. And during many moments, I felt sense of oneness when they would listen to the story, or when I would be sharing an experience, or somebody else would be sharing an experience, and obviously during initiation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel it developed throughout time.
What develops throughout time?
My confidence in standing in a moment of initiation with my students.
Uh-huh. Yes. But miraculously enough, even if it develops in that first moment of your first initiation ever, which is an initiation for yourself as well as for the student who's being initiated, it works.
Exactly. Incredible, isn't it? Yes.
And it's totally a miracle. Like, I can't figure out how it works. Do you have any great theories?
Stories?
Stories or theories. Either one.
Well, it's been challenged by many questions, you know, coming from the students. It's been really wonderful to be able to work in Mexico and work also in the United States and France in terms of how the initiation is received by the students when, you know, when we speak about having an initiation and mm-hmm. how to prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize something different is asked of me when I'm in different groups. Or comes, I don't know if it's asked with me or Reiki, but that comes through me. In Mexico, usually it's something that seems quite natural. You know, there's more, you know, how do I need to sit? You know, how do I need to be? Just explain to me, you know, how I can be in the initiation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've worked in California, for example, I have to explain what initiation is and what it's for and what does it mean. So it's really interesting to see how different cultures really live it in a different way. Even the word awakens different images or
mm-hmm.
ideas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what about in France?
Well, in France, it's even more difficult because there is a whole. It's interesting. There's a sense of losing one's own individuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's related to something that's more of a sect. It's about not being free anymore.
Fascinating. Considering the history of the country, mm-hmm. it's that I know of. It's a fascinating. Process. I think this particular fierceness about individual independence and about not losing oneself, you know, in a group is so strong in France that it comes out not only culturally but legally also there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. Really, really fascinating.
Yes.
Huh. So, when you talk to your students then, have you come up with a kind of theory of what are you doing?
Well, I began repeating what I had been taught.
Uh-huh.
Saying that, you know, like the metaphor of being, you know, somehow regulating a radio so you could
right.
channel certain frequencies. And then many of my students, you know, said, well, we all are somehow, you know, decoders, or we all, you know, transmit energy. So what does this make, you know, what makes this special? And what I see with me, and what the answer I give is that we all are energy, so we
uh-huh.
all transmit energy, but that there is something about somebody that has, you know, taken a Reiki class. When that person touches me and gives me a Reiki treatment, I feel the difference.
Uh-huh.
So I really speak about the mystery of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't really think that my mind can explain it.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, I would assume, not words.
Exactly.
Although, as our listeners probably have gotten by now, you're a very poetic speaker. So, that's one way, it seems, to bridge this unknown. Like, I think about the poet Rumi, who's a Sufi poet from, I don't know, some 1,200 years ago or something, and he tried to describe his relationship with his beloved Allah, and from the One, and it was so poetically beautiful and very touching, but his words had to always act as metaphor rather than as direct.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite poets, really. Yeah.
And amusing.
Yes. Yes, some of his poems are fantastic.
Yes, mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yes.
So I'm just, I don't know, when we talk about mystery, do we come to a dead end then, as far as language goes, or... yeah.
Yes, I it reminds me a little bit of the many years when people ask me what Reiki was, and my not finding the words to explain it, you know, rather saying, let's just, you know, I'll just give you Reiki treatment, and maybe we can talk about it later.
Right.
And because it's really more of a sensation or an experience, and that is why, and I think I understood much better with years what you say about the, you know, the nine elements being as important, and you know they have their own place within the system, and I really feel that is true.
Right.
In the sense that initiation is only part of the experience.
Right.
And for the first years, it felt like I needed to create a special place for initiation, even physically.
Uh-huh.
I needed to have, you know, a specific setup for initiation.
Uh-huh.
And now, with years, I realize that initiation is truly one of the aspects, you know, one of the parts of a Reiki class.
Mm-hmm.
And that also creates much, how would I say, a much more open awareness for the students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They realize that treatment or self-treatment is so important as an initiation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really good point. I mean, I never really thought about that, and when I used to say, it's so interesting that we come up with these things, like when we first started to share the nine elements and four aspects, I would say to people, you know, they would say, well, obviously initiation is the most important. And I would say, well, yes, that's kind of what we obviously think of. But if they are all equally important, then how can we put initiation within this context of not hierarchy, but in some way a circle or a sphere where all the elements are interconnected? And through the years, I've realized the wisdom of my words, but at that point I thought to myself, sometimes afterwards, well, I hope this is right. But it felt right. I mean, it felt like this was, you know, we can put it like this, the information coming through me. And I had to learn that it was true as well. And, you know, so now what I see is that the initiation is this really amazing, pivotal moment in a person's life where their life takes a different course. It's an initiation. It's a beginning of a new part of their life. And it may be that the trajectory of where they had been going in their life with all the things set up, where they were born, what parents they had, what education they had, all of these different factors ended up to point toward a certain direction. And at the point of Reiki initiation or any kind of major spiritual initiation, this particular direction is reconsidered.
Yeah.
And then our lives go into a different direction often. And in order to take that different direction, we need to have the other eight elements to support us in setting off on this different direction. So, you know, I think about treatments, for instance, especially self-treatment, as being the comforter.
Yes.
The time when we're really afraid or we don't know what we're doing or we're hoping that we're right, that we can treat ourselves and come back to this place of congruency where we trust, you know, this path that we've just started on. And It reminds me of planting seeds in a fertile ground that the other eight elements provides the nutrient for the seed of the initiation.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, does that feel like something that you can relate to?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the vision of the lighting a candle.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that image of it being so significant, and you know that candle needing the air and everything around it so it could shine, and it could continue to be lit. And it's true. It's true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you know, when I think of many of my students, if the initiation is exactly supported and during the classes is supported by all the other elements, like having time for the story or having time for, you know, the precepts and all the other elements, gives them a sense of congruency.
Mm-hmm.
There is a it's like a whole piece,
mm-hmm,
that they take with them.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I'm just thinking, I don't know if this is too personal of a question, but, you know, I always say to people, ask, and then you can always say no. So in your life, you were going on a certain direction, and do you feel like your direction expanded or changed, or... you know, what influence did the initiations have on your life as a whole?
Oh, it truly feels like before the initiation, my life was not mine.
Uh-huh.
So I had made all the right choices.
Uh huh.
Being a good daughter, wife, and mother, and you know, I was the school director then, and and obviously the initiation came after a very, very difficult grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, an intense search. So when I was initiated in Reiki, my whole life changed. I mean, really, my whole life. I was no longer married, no longer a school director, broke up with my parents.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. But it felt like I had finally found a way to own my own decisions in life.
Uh-huh.
It was exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
Not always easy. I mean, it wasn't at all easy. But it was something that was just not negotiable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with time, what I have found is that it feels like it goes on, it moves in cycles. So there's very definite cycles of growth. That are, there seems to be several initiations. You know, there's the first degree and then second degree and then the mastery. But in between and after, like, you know, doing an initiation myself and then having a second degree class, and then it feels like I also grow in my understanding of initiations for myself and others.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, this is when you're speaking about yourself now as a master, that as you grow in your understanding of initiation, this changes it also for your students.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And it's wonderful to be able to meet with students that have been, you know, living their lives and meeting with me for a number of years, and see how their understanding of their initiation has also changed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they feel they also have it seems like a sort of a capacity to understand their own initiations, you know, when they start something new in their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you have a story that comes up for you that you would like to share about initiation or about one of your initiations, or...
Well, I don't know know if it's a good story, but there's something that comes up. There's
well, we have to trust Reiki will...
I have to.
will have whatever the right one is rise to the surface.
Well, here's one.
Okay.
I had a very large group. Well, what I feel is was a very large group, 15 people for a first degree class, and it was early in my mastery. And so I was trying to figure out time and timing, and I had never spent so much time doing initiation. And a woman just felt, you know, that she needed to keep her hands like above her head for a very, very long time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was trying to, after a few minutes, to just help her come back to her so I could go to the following person.
Uh-huh.
And I heard her complaining about me not letting her be, with her hands up long enough.
Uh-huh.
She wanted to stay there for the whole day.
Uh-huh.
She really wanted to be there the whole time. So the next day, I planned for her to be able to stay for as long as she wanted. It was very, very interesting to see how I was not in my worry about time,
uh-huh.
Not present.
Uh-huh.
I need to be more, you know, to stay in that space of initiation.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Oh, nice. Well, I have one that matches that one, I'll tell you.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, as we say, we grow. So in the late 1980s and early 1990s, it was kind of a, what should I say? It was a huge explosion of initiation of Reiki masters. And in that time, that's mostly what I was doing, was preparing and initiating masters. And then, you know, creating communications and so on with people whom I have already initiated and so on. And was very, very busy with all this. So, and, you know, it was at a time when Reiki was just starting to come to Europe. And so I had a few Reiki master candidates in many different countries. So I would have them come, and I still do sometimes, have them come together to be initiated as a group because, well, obviously it was easier for me, but I didn't have time to go to each person individually and be with them for the 10 days or so that I needed in order to initiate them. And then I liked doing classes and so on. So I started doing them in groups, and what I found with this actually is that they really served each other, because one person wouldn't ask all the questions that 10 people would. And often they wouldn't even think about the question. So it ended up serving, they ended up serving each other. And also they had their own community in which to fall back on as a way to enter into a very growing and exploding master community, where they had their own kind of siblings, you know, brothers and sisters that they were initiated with. So I had a group like this in southern Germany, and there was a woman from the United States who didn't speak any other language other than American. I had a couple of people from Holland, one of whom spoke German and English and Dutch. The other woman didn't speak any English. Well, just a few words of English and no German. Then I had a few Germans, like four or five Germans, three of whom didn't speak any English or any Dutch. And it was just this amazing group of people. So I think there were, I think, about 8 of them. And I had driven from Amsterdam to the very south part of Germany during the night, so in a car. So this was a crazy trip. And it ended up that for a lot of different reasons, we ended up getting there late. And the hotel had decided that was the day that they had to change something in their plumbing system. So we ended up there for lunch, which we did, and then I was going to go have a shower and then start the class, and the man at the hotel said, "Well, I'm sorry, the water is totally turned off for the whole afternoon." So I just thought, oh my God. So here I was, I hadn't taken a shower for a couple of days and ridden in this sweaty car with people smoking in this car for, you know, hours, like 12 hours or something. And so I was just fed up with the whole thing. So I sent this group of people who could hardly communicate with each other out to find their initiation place. That was their homework. And two of the gals were living in that area, a really beautiful area called the Bodensee in very South Germany. And it's right on this beautiful lake. So they went off, and I kind of got myself together, and a few hours later I ended up meeting up with them in the place where we were going to have dinner, right on the lake. And they were all happy and laughing, and they didn't, you know, their language was not a barrier. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that they're getting along. So I got out of the car, and they said, "Well, we want to be initiated today. We found the place. It's a beautiful evening. Let's just do it now." And I thought, well, I haven't prepared myself. I'm not clean. I haven't brushed my teeth in like 2 days. And, you know, I was not in a good mood. And I was just, you know, I had all these different reasons why this would not be a good time to initiate these people as masters. And so I told them that, and they said, "Oh, we don't care. Don't worry about it." So then they said, "But the initiation site is just a little bit down the lake, a few minutes walk," I was told. So I said, "Okay." So we start walking, and after about 10 minutes or so, I said to Ursula, I said, "Well, you said this was a few minutes. Like, are we almost there?" And she said, no, we're not. We're about halfway." So it ended up to be a half-hour walk, which what I realized in Germany and in Holland is a few minutes walk. But for me, as an American, this was, like, really a long walk. And I actually found out later that Ursula, who led us to this place, was a racing walker. So for her, it was a few minutes. But for me, who was a stroller, going very slow in my walking, it was a very slow walk, a very long walk, I should say. So we get there. It's a beautiful, beautiful area underneath this huge tree. There were swans that came up from the lake. It was wonderful. And all of a sudden, one of my colleagues, who was already initiated, started to build a fire. And I went, "No, we're wasting daylight." So I said, "You know, please don't do this because you're just wasting time." He said, no, "I feel like I have to do this." So he built this little fire, and I sat and waited. And when I sat and waited, I just put my hands on myself. And the first thought that came to me was, "Phyllis, this is exactly why you're here. You're here to initiate and acknowledge these people as masters. And if you have any other priority, just forget it. Just let it go. Because, you know, this is why you're here." And I had told them before as we were walking, I said, "Okay, well, these are going to be the fastest initiations I've ever done." And so I let it go, and we started the initiations. I did one of them at a time, and it was a very slow process. And this little fire that this colleague of mine built just brushed us with the smoke, and it just cleansed everything out of the air. I mean, it was amazing. It was like this cleansing fire smoke that just was this blessing. And I took my time. I did everyone in their own time. We had amazing experiences with the swans. And just as I finished the last initiation, the sun dipped down behind the mountains and it became dark. And it was such a lesson for me that all the things that we put around initiation about vanity and, you know, creating sacred space and so on, if we just follow Reiki, if I just kept in my mind the priority of what we were doing in that moment, that everything would just work out.
It was an
amazing time. And the addendum to this, of course, is that we walked back. We got back to the restaurant on the lakeside, and they were closed. So, you know, especially back then, this was like in 1990, I think, I was not very amicable and happy if I missed a meal. And at this point, I had missed a couple of them. So I was really like a bear with a sore head, as they would say. So we leaped in the car, and Ursula, who knew this area, drove around, and she leapt out of the car in front of this building and then motioned for us to come in. And it was this, like a little, not a castle, but a little country. It was like a huge country house, you know, with a courtyard in the front and so on. So we walked through these gates, went into the courtyard, went into this beautiful building. And it was a restaurant with like white linen tablecloth, crystal, and silver. This was in the German countryside. And here I am in my jeans, which I've worn for 2 days. At least, and my bad breath and everything. And we had the most elegant 3 or 4 course dinner, and which took another 2 or 3 hours. And it was wonderful. And I thought that she had planned this, but years afterwards, we were talking and laughing about the initiation night. And she said, well, you know, she said, I really lucked out because I didn't know whether this place would be even open. But they were willing to take us at the last minute, like they were just closing when she got there, and she begged them to take us. And they did, and they made it such a beautiful experience. It was so wonderful.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful story.
I mean, isn't that really wonderful? And, you know, and for all of the times that I've done initiations, whether they've been first degree or second degree or master's initiation, I've felt like there's a part of Reiki that's much more than just this one little piece of ceremony in the room, that it's this whole environment that happens around it.
And that
people bring that to this time. And when that happens, you just live in magic.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed by the sense of wonder.
Right.
That, you know, that we all have. During a Reiki class, you know, first and second degree. I mean, I haven't initiated masters, but I imagine that's also an experience in itself. But it's very, very special.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that has happened to me in initiating masters is that I have felt that at the time when I initiate them, you know, I had this happen when I was in doing first degree also in the beginning of my teaching, that I had this German phrase in my mind a lot. Well, when you made me a master, which is their way of saying when you initiated me. And that used to ring in my mind until I realized that I didn't really make the masters. even though they didn't actually say that in German. But that's what I got in the translation of English. But it gave me the insight that I don't make masters, I recognize them. And that recognition is such, I mean, true recognition is such a powerful space that I feel like we don't, as in our own lives these days, we don't really understand the power of recognition. So I have taken that back to my first degree and said, well, you know, if we are initiating first degree students, aren't we recognizing that we are one? You know, isn't this a time of recognition?
Yes.
And so I'm just wondering if you can relate to this, what you would say about, you know, how that comes about. Like, what are we recognizing and how do we come ready to be recognized? Do you have any...
I think it's also something that I have lived as a process. I was remembering when you were talking about initiating master, my own initiation as a master, and the expectation, you know, of that moment that I had that was, you know, was built over the years. And it was like one of these moments where you wish it would never end. I remember, you know, how, I don't know, it felt like it lasted forever, but it was over very quickly. And after that, the time it took me to be able to see, I would see in my students' eyes, or I would listen in their words, how they recognized me as their master. And how difficult it was for me to accept it. And it wasn't like I didn't believe them. It's like I didn't believe I myself could be a master. Even if I had longed for it and really had a wonderful relationship with my master in walking with her through this process. And with time, I can receive that. And in the degree that I receive that, I can acknowledge them. It's really, as you say, the process of oneness. For me to be able to recognize them, I have to let them recognize me.
Yes. Very powerful. So a part of this process of recognition for me is realizing that as a young master, I wanted to divert, and I would use the word now, divert, but I wouldn't have 30 years ago, but I wanted to divert people's relationship instead of as a master and student to friendship or to... maybe a sexual partner, maybe a possible sexual partner, maybe a brother or a sister. We went through this time when I was a young master where we would get together and say, oh, right now I see you as my uncle, or right now I see you as my parent, or, you know, it was like acknowledging projection. But now I see how that was simply not understanding that there could be this unique relationship of master and student.
Yes.
And that I was able to hold that. That was very, very difficult. Yeah.
Yes, I can relate with that.
Yeah.
Exactly, because it was an unknown way of holding a relationship.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I was kind of overwhelmed by when I first met it was what I considered to be a Mexican way of holding this relationship of between master and student. and even the way that they addressed me, I still cannot get them to drop calling me master. So, you know, every once in a while they slip and they just call me Phyllis. But, you know, they're not really into it. They want to call me Master. Oh, you know, and talk about me in third person. And that's a part of their acknowledgement of this relationship. And I see that it's just been another stage for me to go through of acknowledging my own relationship with myself, and then my own relationship with my master, who also happened to be my grandmother.
Yes.
Very confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a very interesting relationship with a colleague, and that's one of the conversations that we have. You know, I say your students refer to you as mi maestra, you know, my master. And even when they talk to you, they say maestra, they don't call you by name.
Right.
And I have, probably because I'm raised by French parents, or because it's a different way of perceiving it, I would rather have my students call me by my name and acknowledge each other as, you know, somehow, I wouldn't say equals, but I ask people, I don't
yes.
know.
Mm-hmm.
What I see, because I know many of her students, is how much honor and how special that place is for the student.
Yes.
That's something that allowing the student to be able to be in that place is also a gift.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really see that it serves some students, you know, uh-huh. that need that relationship.
Well, I feel like as masters, we not only get recognized, but then we grow into, you know, this place of mastery, because we're all growing in ourselves. You know, as our students grow, so do we. And this is one of the big ones, and I think that in our collective as masters, you know, there were, in the beginning, there was always this question, well, what are we masters of? You know, I've only done Reiki for 2 or 3 years, how can I be initiated as a master? And on some level, that was a really good question. And then even if, after 10 years, you know, to be... And then I just thought, well, but it's not about being an expert. Nobody can be an expert on Reiki. But we can maybe be dedicated students of Reiki, the energy. And through that particular device in my mind, I have the possibility then of seeing that mastery is as a path, as a student, as well as a path of teaching.
Yeah. Yes. I have a story that comes up, and I remember a conference, and I think it was in Denmark. And during cabaret night, German masters made a little play about mastery. And I was a young master then, I don't know, it was like 3 or 4 years maybe. And I remember they did like the developmental stages of the story, which was hilarious. It was just, I enjoyed it immensely. And it gave me some sort of comfort because they described that there is also a process of growth within mastery that is also something that was comforting for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To know that to acknowledge myself and be acknowledged, and to be able to acknowledge my master, I would grow into it.
Mm-hmm.
There was some sort of predictable development that mm-hmm. I would go through. That mm-hmm. really, and I can see it in my students.
Mm-hmm.
That's why That's why it's always important to have students that have been initiated for several years and others that have just been initiated to be able to exchange and be together.
Well, I have a question for you. We'll just shift the topic a little bit. Do you perceive a difference between magic and mystery?
I do when I live in a country like Mexico.
Oh, tell me.
Because magic is part of the folk culture. And it's something that there are witches and there are people practicing magic.
Uh-huh.
In Mexico, and it is very common, and it's part of conversation.
Right.
So that is something very clear and very defined in the Mexican culture.
Mm-hmm.
And mystery is something that, for me, is wordless and cannot be explained, but can be felt or experienced. Or can change a person from one moment to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that sense, I'm very touched by the Mexican culture. It's something that I have in me.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between these two words.
Mm-hmm. So in reviewing sort of our language over the last, not quite an hour. I would say that I've used magic and mystery maybe interchangeably, and I see that that's probably not accurate. That I would say that though it might be magic, it is definitely part of the mystery,
mm-hmm.
the initiation, and that how this whole process works through Reiki is... mystery.
Yes.
Or mystical. And what about mystical? Is that different than again?
Hmm. Well, that it's more subtle between mystery and mystical.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think for me, mystery, mystical is has to do with being one.
Why mystery feels like, or the impression I have is that it's greater. It's something that goes beyond my own understanding.
Uh-huh.
It feels like magic has a human,
uh-huh.
human element to it,
uh-huh.
and the mystical would be the union between the human and the mystery.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. Uh-huh. Hmm. Well, even though we think that, for instance, treatment is pretty physical, it's not really. It's also imbued with mystery and certainly creates mystical experiences.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that when we speak about initiation, there's always a tendency to... devote ourselves to the mystical and the mystery of it. And because there are hardly any words to describe it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I there's the sense when the initiation is over and the person stands on the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this quality of not being here or there.
Mm-hmm.
When they, it's so beautiful to see that,
mm-hmm.
and feeling that myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's a beautiful image to keep with us as we end the session. Thank you very much, Alima, for your time and your gift of poetry and your wonderful sharing that you've given us today.
Inviting me. I'm very honored. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we will now close the session. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.